Okay. All right, so we've got it in two parts. All right, what were the questions?
Where?
How much current is the motor going to drive that's going to draw at stall? Point? 0.3 amps. And how did you get that? T equals KTI, and you are given torque at stall, and you are given KT. So, straightforward. Okay, next one. Can the 3658 safely switch that much current? What's the limit on the 3658? Pardon? 1.5 amps. That sounds a bit high, but... Pardon? In a big bold print up at the top? Or actually in the data sheet? Okay, all right. So the 3658 is clearly safe for this one. Okay. What's the no-load speed? Pardon? 1.74 kRPM. Okay, how did you arrive at that? Because that's ever so slightly... Oh, no, I guess not. Yep, okay. So how did you arrive at that? And then you use the KT, KE. KT times what? 1.35? Okay. Straightforward. What's the coil resistance? 40 ohms. We know what the applied voltage is. We know what the current. Now we know what the current is. Straightforward. What? Oh, and often smaller. Yeah. Motor resistances are typically quite small. In fact, it's not uncommon for them to get down on the order of 10 ohms. Exactly. All you're seeing is, at stall, is the resistance of that wire. And while there's a lot of wire there, it's a very small diameter. It's only sort of marginal. Well, actually, if you look at that data sheet, the 3-volt motor had a coil resistance of about 0.8 ohm, I think, because it was designed to operate on such a low voltage. Okay, torque at a given speed, and in particular, pick a speed. So, how am I going to find the torque at a given speed? What? Well, I want the symbols, and then I want to know where you got all the, how you got the numbers to plug into those symbols. KT times I stall. KT, KE over R. Pardon? Times omega. And this is equal to the torque? That's what everybody used? Pardon? I use a very different variation. I went the other way around. And I guess suppose, pardon? Is KTIS omega N? I've not actually seen the KTIS, but what? It doesn't strike me as it is. This is the way I thought I had tried to lead you through it. This is the equation of that line, and so depending on what you want and what you know, you can plug in for omega and solve for t, or you can plug in for t and just calculate omega directly. We just calculated r. You were given kt, you calculated ke in order to get the omega no load, so we've got both omega low load and ke, so we've got all the values we need. Pick a t, pick, and you get the equivalent omega. Pick omega, you get the equivalent t. So you can use that to figure out how much will it meet the design requirements. Yes? Yes? No? How close do you? How close is it to meeting the design requirements? Max RPM is 1700. Well, the design requirements are that it make 0.4 inch ounces at 1500 RPM. Yeah, I come up with 0.38 as well. So, you know, depending, the last time I gave this lecture, everybody said, not enough significant figures. That's good enough as 0.4. Okay, and I'll say that's good enough at 0.4. Will it meet the design requirements? Even if it may, if we call 0.38, 0.4, will it make meet the design requirements? No. That was the motor is supposed to be driven from a 12 volt supply and switched with a 3658. Every switching element is going to have a voltage drop associated with it. So you've got 12 volts, and you just calculated that at 12 volts you're a shade less than what you were going to be. But what's going to happen when you actually add in the fact that you're only driving it at 11 point something volts? Because you've got the loss across the 3658 to account for what the motor actually sees. That's going to drop the torque even further. So I would argue that it won't meet the design requirements in an actual circuit where it's being switched. Yes, Darren. You got the 3658 data sheet. It tells you, I believe, there's a saturation voltage. Hand me the sheet real quick and I'll tell you what it's called. The output low voltage at 300 milliamps is typically 2/10 of a volt, but it could be as much as 4/10 of a volt. So in the worst case, we lost 4/10 of a volt across the 3658. So the drive voltage was only 11.6 volts. And that's something, and I call that out in this problem specifically because it's something that people often forget when they're going through this analysis, is that each of these switching elements has a voltage drop associated with it. And if it wasn't a 3658, but a something like a ULN 2003, which I also gave you the data sheet for last time, that's a Darlington. Darlingtons have 8/10 of a volt or more loss across the switching element. And so there's even more voltage that's lost in the switching element and less available for the motor. Okay. So can you estimate the current required when running at the design point, assuming you could get it running at the design point? Forty milliamps? Yeah. And how? T equals KTI. I mean, we know what KT is. We know what the running torque requirement is. This equation holds everywhere for this motor. So how would we get the motor to run to meet the design requirements? What would we have to do? Yeah, we're going to have to up the voltage in this case, or alternatively, find ourselves a different motor. and you smile at finding a different motor, but it's probably easier to find a different motor than it is to replace your 12-volt power supply with a 15-volt supply, assuming there were other things that were depending on that 12 volts in your circuit. So, okay. All right. Now let's talk about controlling DC motors. In order to be able to reverse the direction of a DC motor, all you need to do is to change the direction of current flow through the motor. So reverse the polarity on the leads of the motor, it'll turn back the other way. But, and so if you've got a bipolar supply, that is one that is both a positive and a negative supply, it's fairly simple to do that. A couple of transistors. So current either flows this way through the motor, or it flows this way through the motor. So which of these transistors we turn on will determine which direction the motor flows. Most of the time, though, we don't have the luxury of having two opposite polarity power supplies. And we end up having to try and do it using a single power supply. And this is the circuit of choice for that situation. It's referred to as an H-bridge, because of the configuration of the components there. The way it works is if we turn on this diagonally opposite pair of transistors, then we've got a conduction path that runs like this. And if we turn on this diagonally opposite pair, we get a current path like this. So we can change the direction of current flow through the motor even though we have only a single polarity power supply by controlling these transistors in diagonally opposite pairs. There's one thing that you want to be very careful of when you're controlling these transistors. And what might that be? What do you never want to do? And how would you connect power and ground? Yeah. You want to make sure you never have the upper and lower on the same side together, because there's nothing to limit the current flow in that path, and one of those transistors is going to fail, and the other will probably be damaged along the way. We're going to come back to the two diodes in just a couple of minutes. I really intended to take them off of this for this point. But so the H-bridges, you can build them, although that's not the desirable way to do it, especially in the context of this class. You can buy H-bridges, and in fact, when you do the lab and when you build the project, we'll have a couple of different sizes of H-bridges available for you with current ratings from up to an amp for one of them and up to 2 amps, I believe, maybe 3, for the other. So that should cover the range of motors that you need to be able to control for the projects. All right. So how do we control the speed of a DC motor? Pardon? Rumble. That's not right. The way that we control it is by controlling the voltage that it gets applied to the motor. And then we control the voltage that gets applied to the motor by pulse width modulation. What we're doing is making use of the fact that a motor, because of the mechanical characteristics of the motor, acts like a low-pass filter. So I put in a pulsing signal, but there's a lot of inertia, relatively speaking, a lot of inertia in the rotor of the motor. especially of the kind that I passed around that actually have an iron core to them. Really high performance motors don't have any iron in the core. They've thrown it away in order to make the core as light as possible with as low of inertia as possible so that it can respond very quickly. But even at that, those motors have substantial inertia associated with them so that we can actually turn the power on and off to them fairly quickly, and it will be perceived as a continuous voltage at something less than what the total voltage is. So we apply a 50% duty cycle and we get roughly half, half of what the terminal voltage is, whatever the on voltage was. And the motor would run at a speed that would be the same as if we would powered it from a DC source with that voltage. So by changing the pulse width modulation duty cycle is the fraction that's on relative to the total time. That defines the duty cycle. And that ratio times whatever the drive voltage is gives us what the effective applied voltage is for the motor. And then we can use that effective applied voltage with all the equations that we were just looking at to calculate what the performance of the motor is going to be like. So that tells us about choosing the duty cycle for the pulse width modulation. How do we choose what this period is going to be? Okay, let's do it in electrical terms. It's actually a second order system, but let's just talk about it as a first order system now. If I put in a square wave out here, what do I expect the output to look like? Pardon? You have to speak up. A straight line? Under what conditions would it be a straight line? We have to speak up with this noise. I can't. If you can charge the capacitors up. So what's the voltage going to be of this straight line? Ah, yes. It would, if we can get it to the point where it's a straight line, it would be the average voltage that's applied. So the duty cycle times the applied terminal voltage. But what happens if, that makes an assumption about the characteristics of that low-pass filter. You've assumed that this frequency of drive was far above the corner frequency of this filter. If I lower the frequency, eventually I'll get to something that looks like this, where I see the characteristic RC charge during the time when it's on, and then I'll see the characteristic RC discharge during the time when it's off. What you've done is attenuated this large-scale oscillation going in and made it somewhat smaller as a response to the RC filter. If you move those two apart, if the corner frequency of the, should put it on the left hand, the corner frequency of the motor is way below the frequency at which you're driving it, therefore the period of the PWM, then you'll get something that approximates a straight line. And the deciding factor in how high you have to go is how much of this can you tolerate? Because this variation, this pulsing in the effective voltage, is going to result in the motor actually responding. So it's going to speed up and slow down, or alternatively, you'll say that the torque output will rise and fall. So what we typically would refer to that as torque ripple. And so if the frequency is too low, the amplitude of the torque ripple will be noticeable and fairly high. As you increase the frequency of drive, the torque ripple will shrink down and you'll eventually reach a point where it doesn't matter for the application that you're at. It will always be there. If you look close enough, it will always be there. But eventually it gets small enough that you don't worry about it anymore. So the mechanical time constant of the motor is what's going to determine what the lower limit of this drive frequency would be. Yes, Darren. It's really easy to make this. We've got digital outputs that come out of the microprocessor. And if we use transistors in saturation so that they're either fully on or fully off, we will minimize the amount of power that's lost in the switching element so that this will result, one, it will be easy to create the voltage and it will result in minimal losses in the control system. People, when torque ripple has to be at its absolute minimum, people actually use linear amplifiers and supply not a pulsing voltage, but a fixed linear voltage to the motor in order to drive it. But the result of that is more complicated circuitry to drive it and greater losses in that drive circuitry. Very quickly then, before we quit, what determines the upper limit on the frequency? So is the lower limit set by the mechanical time constant? What do you think sets the upper limit? The bandwidth of what's providing the current? Oh no, we're assuming that the power supply is constant. So what I'm trying to decide is if I've got a good enough power supply, what's the upper limit on the frequency? Can I just make it arbitrarily high? Because clearly the further apart I put the frequency, the further away the frequency is from the corner frequency of the motor, the smaller the torque ripple is going to be. So there's an advantage in creating less torque ripple to moving that frequency out much higher. It might ultimately depend on how fast you can switch the transistors, but there's another limitation way before you get there. And you're probably, because I told you could ignore it to start with, now we've reached that point. Remember that inductor that was part of the DC motor model? Now we're talking about a dynamic situation. We're not talking about continuous drive. And now the behavior of that inductor comes into play. So what will set the upper frequency limit is the inductance of the motor. Because what's going to happen is, during this time, if this frequency is too high, what will happen is the motor current will be rising, and before it gets a chance to rise all the way up to where it belongs, I'll turn it off. And so what actually happens is I can take a 50% duty cycle, drive it at a very low frequency, and the motor pulses along. And then as I speed it up, the motor gets smoother and smoother and smoother. And then there's a range over which the motor is perceptibly smooth and at a constant speed. If you keep increasing the frequency of the PWM, the motor starts to slow down. And it starts to slow down because this period is getting, the on period is effectively getting so short, even though the duty cycle is the same, the on time is so short that we're never allowing the current to build in the coil of the motor, and therefore it's not making any torque. All right. That's it for today then. We'll meet in here at 9:00 on Monday night, if you choose to come, for the review session. Bring your questions. The midterm covers everything up through today. So I will expect you to be able to work motor problems as part of the midterm. Yes?
Do you want our homework?
Yeah. Well, I didn't set a due time for the homework, and so I'll take it up till 5 o'clock, drop it in the box in the labs. Yeah. You're switching the voltage that's applied, and that in turn changes the current that's being driven through the motor. The voltage is the thing that we actually have control over.
Okay. Exactly.
We're gonna set that frequency such that the motor responds as if it was a constant voltage.
Okay.
Yeah. And so all of the analysis about the performance of the voltage, the performance of the motor at a given voltage, we're going to treat it like it's whatever the duty cycle times the drive voltage. That's the effective applied voltage.
How can I get your OK on my DSL?
Actually, nobody's been having trouble with that, so you could go ahead and cut it if you want. Make sure you walk through the new version so that you've ungrouping everything, because that's so far that's the only problem that we've seen.
Okay.
So you can go ahead and cut it. Yeah. Sure.
Can I get checked out?
Sure. Why don't we, since there's another class coming in here, why don't we let me gather my stuff up, and then I'll take a look at it just outside.